Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Zonal Marking Podcast. There's no Ali Maxwell this week, so it's just me and Tom Warville after a pretty big couple of days in the football world. Ali always asks us what we've been writing about at this stage. I've obviously been writing about the Super League and the prospect of that. And maybe coming to a slightly different conclusion in the sense that I'm not sure it's unavoidable in the long run. And I think that the status quo in football is deeply flawed and we should guard against glorifying that. There was also another big story on Monday, Tom, with the departure of Jose Mourinho from Tottenham, and you were on Mourinho duty, I see.
Yeah, very much. Quite funny, because I think a couple of weeks ago we were talking about, I was writing a piece gearing towards Mourinho's 1,000th game in charge and looking at trends and how that's changed. And yeah, that was my first port of call yesterday morning, getting started on the work on that. And then, yeah, boom, half an hour in, you can stop writing that piece now, or at least put it on the back burner until he joins Zenit St. Petersburg or wherever he'll end up next. So yeah, I was kind of tasked with doing a bit of a data obituary, I guess, on what happened with Mourinho at Tottenham and just the decline, the way that they were playing, and really just the numbers behind his time, his 17 months in charge there.
Yeah, and like all the great obituaries, you started writing before the the end was confirmed, so it's very convenient for you. Today we're going to go back and really discuss an article you wrote last week, which was about crossing, which I thought was a really fascinating article because it's not something I've really seen analysed much before. For those listening who haven't read the article, what was the basis of it?
It was really to look at different types of crosses and try and put kind of a value on crossing in the sport and understand like what value it adds, what are good locations to cross on, which are bad. And yeah, like you said, there's not really been any real work on crossing. I mean, it is a big part of the game. Teams use it to score goals and manufacture chances, but it's not really been put under the microscope too much. So it was in a similar vein to a piece I did last year about passes and different types of passes, and just naturally kind of led on from there, really.
Yeah, it did indeed, especially with the focus at times on Alexander Arnold and Robertson, because remember the article we did about Liverpool's passing last year was really good as well. Before we go into the kind of theory and the depth and how you did it, I want to look at some what I would call the headline stats that jumped out at me. First, 1 in 76 open play crosses leads to a goal. That's pretty rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really pants. It was probably a little bit higher than I expected, but it just shows you how kind of a flawed strategy it is to just really keep pumping cross into the box, really. I mean, I looked at one of the things I did in the analysis was kind of look over a 6-second window after the cross has gone in to see if there's a goal scored from the chaos that ensues afterwards or an own goal. And it jumps up to 1 in 50 crosses lead to goals in that time, which is a pretty steep jump, really. But still, 1 in 50 for every cross that goes in is... Yeah, you can see why maybe the top teams are looking to cross less and less from wide in recent seasons.
Yeah, the 6-second thing was interesting. I haven't really seen that before, looking at time frame rather than actions. Second stat that jumped out on me was a 25% drop in crossing numbers over the last decade in terms of crosses per game. Is that because the clubs have worked out that the numbers are pretty bad?
Yeah, I wonder so. I wonder if that's the case. Again, it's kind of intriguing because only really the top clubs have started to bring in data people in the last kind of few years, Liverpool being the exception. And yet Liverpool are a team that cross more than anyone else. So it's funny to see that they're going against the trend. But I do wonder if it's just because we now have such a high ceiling of technical talent in the Premier League that their kind of talents are better than just putting a cross into the box. And maybe there's a different profile of strikers, but we'll get into that later, I assume.
Yeah, we definitely will. And before we do, last standout stat, and sticking with the rubbish stats, is Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has zero assists from his last 183 crosses. I don't know where this fits into Mikel Arteta's pure maths, but I mean, that must be off the scale rubbish, right?
Yeah, it's definitely one of the worst. And you just think that Aubameyang is a very, very good striker and he's a very bad crosser. I mean, that's just like anyone can really tell you that. But yeah, he's been tasked with doing this for Arsenal, which really doesn't make a lot of sense. But yeah, that was one of the more fun ones to pull out and thinking, okay, we've got a good headline here, if that's the stat we can use for it.
Yeah, I must say, I mean, when I played, I was pretty much only good at crossing. So if I had 183 chances to cross the ball into the box, I reckon I'd get one assist from one of them, surely. But yeah, maybe not. Maybe it's harder than it seems. Let me ask you a little bit about the theory behind this all, because like I said, I've never really seen much in-depth analysis of crossing before. Has there been much prior research on this or anything at the OptiPro forum or, yeah, anything you kind of based your work on?
Yeah, I asked around a few people and I think a lot of the stuff that I only really found out after I'd done the piece is that a few clubs have done kind of internal studies. But there was one piece of research I was really, inspired by for this, which is by a cap called Gary Gillard, who sadly passed away last year, and he's a bit of a pioneer in the football analytics space, and he worked with Chelsea in the early kind of 2000s, I think, and a bunch of other clubs. And he did a piece at the OptiPro forum which looked to do something fairly similar. He used a different approach, but yeah, he essentially wanted to look at cross types using both the start and the end location of where crosses go, which I think is flawed for a couple of reasons. But yeah, that was a big inspiration from his work, and it was one of those presentations at the OptiPro forum which you could see the applicable nature of it straight away to those in the building, which was really great to see. So yeah, that was a big inspiration for this piece.
Yeah, I think we've mentioned Gary Gillard before. I mean, probably most people would be unfamiliar with him, but he was almost the godfather of the football analytics movement, I think it's fair to say. I don't know whether this comparison will work for anyone else, but I always thought of him as the Neil Young in relation to the grunge musicians of the 1990s, that kind of like older figure that was like an inspiration for everyone. So it's nice to hear his name again. How about clubs? Have they conducted analysis along these lines?
Yeah, I was chatting to an analyst at kind of one of the big European clubs after the piece had come out, and he was saying they'd done their own kind of similar work internally, not exactly the same, but same sort of thing, and got same sort of zones, and they used those zones actually on the training pitch, and the manager would go out with the spray and draw the zones on, and then they work and build drills to essentially get the ball into those zones to cross in from, which I thought was really cool. That's kind of like proper, you know, data-backed training, which is probably the pinnacle of what you'd expect in the modern game at the moment. So that was one example. And then another analyst was talking about they were doing kind of one-on-one training with a striker, and essentially said, this, if the ball's in this position, this is where it's going to get crossed into, and this is the movement you should make, and essentially just like teaching, I guess, rules for how to react to certain different types of crosses, which was fun to see as well.
Yeah, and it's good to see some numbers on it. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago before I was working for The Athletic, I did an article about basically our crossing wasn't particularly valuable when I was working for ESPN. And I based it on this video of, I think it was Schalke in training. They were doing training drills. It was uncontested, so there were no defenders. And I think they went about 32 crosses without scoring. And that was just a crosser, a striker and a goalkeeper. So it's nice to see a bit more detail on all this. Let's go back to what we briefly mentioned before. You expanded the definition of an assist, which is pretty narrow in general. It's got to be a deliberate pass straight from a provider to a goal scorer. You went for something that or anything that creates a goal in 6 seconds. That presumably is quite a big change in terms of the numbers and how effective crossing can be considered to be.
Yeah, I think the number of goals you get from a cross jumps up about 50% when you expand that window. And that was something that I saw Gary had done, and I kind of looked at, you know, how many goals are scored within n number of seconds of a cross, and 6 looked to be the right figure. So it just can kind of make sense. Like a lot of crossing, when you put players put in a good cross, I feel crosses are maybe more spoken about when it's such a good ball that's whipped in and no one's on the end of it. At times, just because like the flight looks really good and it's in a dangerous area and things like that. And I think the ensuing chaos or failure to clear, or you know, whatever happens after the cross, is worth trying to capture in this situation. So yeah, that's one that I added in, and there were some interesting comments in the piece after, with people saying, you know, could you add that to other types of play, could you add that to certain passes and things like that. So you know a lot of things in football at the moment which are marked as unsuccessful or incomplete or whatever actually doesn't always capture the whole story and all the context of what might happen afterwards. I think Burnley and you know, picking up second balls is one example. Ben Mee, James Tarkowski's pass completion rates are really low, but how many times do Burnley actually pick up second balls from that? And they've served their purpose. It's not a complete pass, but they've gained territory. They've moved further forward because of it.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Burnley. I mean, we think of it as quite an old school approach, don't we? I mean, certainly when I was doing a book about history of Premier League tactics, sides that were based around crossing were kind of 1990s sides, Blackburn and Newcastle in particular. But I do remember Guardiola, maybe when he was at Barcelona, saying something similar about the second balls thing. And I think when they brought in Fabregas, he mentioned that when they were crossing, they weren't always picking up the second balls on the edge of the box. And Fabregas was the kind of player that might do that.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one. It's this kind of like late run into the box. And I didn't really look at perhaps the beneficiaries of this like added assist, but maybe that would actually pick up the guys who are making that late run into space, picking up that second ball. And I mean, one recent example, obviously Ali's not here, but I think Philip Billing has done that really effectively recently for Bournemouth. I think he's scored 6 goals in a recent number of games, and that has been a lot because he's been the Danish Frank Lampard and steaming into the box at the last moment. So yeah, again, another thing to potentially look into in a later article.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like Billing. Actually, I thought he was the only standout player for Huddersfield, really. I thought he always looked quite good. In a number of ways, he had a good long throw as well. I'm always quite partial to a bit of a long throw. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to think about why the change of crossing has come about. I mean, the game's become so much more technical, and we don't really have the wingers like in the Blackburn and Newcastle era now. They're multifaceted, aren't they? They're creators, they're pressers, they're goal scorers. They're kind of playing tight their little passes. I mean, was there any analysis in terms of what type of sides use crossing? I mean, was it poorer sides? Was it sides at the bottom of the table? Because we don't really think of the top sides playing wingers who cross. Obviously, fullbacks cross a lot, but in general, wingers who cross, that seems to belong to either a bygone era or sides at the bottom of the table, really.
Yeah, I think we have seen a kind of a different change of profile of player who's putting crosses in more. I mean, I think the likes of maybe City are a bit of an outlier, but I mean, De Bruyne is someone who isn't a winger. He's an attacking midfielder, but still manages to cross the ball a lot because of kind of the freedom and the nature of his role. But yeah, there was a bit of analysis. I was kind of chatting to Tom Reynolds, who works with Stats Perform, and he's a kind of AI manager there, works on a lot of their products, and was kind of talking about some numbers he looked at and showed that if you look at the even number of crosses per 90 on one axis and kind of like proportion of chances created that comes from crosses on the other, you see a lot of recent champions in Europe aren't very cross heavy, and yet the kind of relegated sides, the poorer sides in this instance, rely so much more on crossing, which makes me think, is that because there again is like a technical ceiling such that you think, okay, we're not good enough to create chances any other way, we've just got to play the percentage game and try and benefit from that perspective. So again, I think back to Brighton a lot this season and I don't think they cross all that much at all, and maybe that's because they've identified that it's a low percentage strategy and actually trying to play football, even though you don't have the budget to compete with other teams, but you can still find these players to fit the system, and they play for a team their size very attractive football, when under Chris Hughton perhaps they were a lot more, I guess, agricultural in their approach to playing and creating chances.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Brighton, it's interesting you mentioned Brighton, because the last couple of times I've seen them, they've been using, or Potter's been using, a system where they have two wing-backs who end up as central midfielders. So I'm not surprised they're not getting into crossing positions very often. Let's get to some specifics, because you basically separate crossing positions into 8 different zones. So that's your big news, everyone. There's basically 8 different crossing zones. How did you come across these zones?
Yeah, I can go very much into the modelling type, but this was a kind of example of data, or, you know, it's never fully objective. Like, I still had to make choices of how many zones there are, how we get to the zones, how to do the modelling in the first place, and things like that. So there's always decisions to be made in kind of any data analysis, really. So if you read otherwise, you can call BS on that. But what I did was I used an approach called unsupervised learning, and that effectively means that you don't have labels for things. You need to like create the labels from the data. So the simplest way I thought for us to explain it is that you have 100 types of beer, and you're told to categorize them into 6 different types of beer. So you've got 100 different bottles and cans on a table, and you've got to put them into the 6 different types. And you might know like the alcohol content, the hoppiness, whether it's in a bottle or a can, And then you're kind of go and think in your mind, okay, what are the best ways that I can group these together into like six similar categories and do it that way. And you might to start with just have like some which are slightly taller bottles and they're more, you know, more alcoholic content in them or something like that. And you keep tweaking and tweaking the groups until you kind of stop and you can't change them anymore. And you're like, right, these are my six categories. So that's kind of what unsupervised is. You're using the characteristics of the thing in question to group them. Supervised learning, on the other hand, is where we'd have labels. So you'd be like, right, one's an IPA, one's a pale ale, one's a stout. Far easier, kind of arguably better in this situation, because you can just quickly be like, right, bam, these are all the groups. Much easier job. In terms of crossing, we don't really have those like nice labels for different types of crosses. We don't really have like, you know, whipped in from deep or to the byline. We don't really know much about like, the trajectory of the cross or the way it's hit and things like that. So I kind of had to take a more unsupervised approach and say, look, just based on the starting location of the cross, what is the different type? So when we say types here, it's more like the zones crosses come from, because the types within them can actually differ a fair bit. I think Opta only recently added kind of driven cross and floated as a addition to their data, which is good, but you don't obviously have enough of a sample to really build that into the model so far. So you need a lot of crosses to do this. I use around 35,000, and yeah, mainly just looked at the starting location. The issue with end locations at times is you have some crosses which will just completely go all the other side to the, you know, from the right hand side or over to the touchline on the left and go up for a throw in, and that just completely kills how do you categorize that, because you don't know where they were aiming for. They weren't aiming for the corner flag on the far side of the pitch, or the you know, usually won't be aiming for that location.
I mean, looking at these zones, the thing that surprised me most was the most profitable in terms of the percentage of crosses that turn into a goal come from the corners of the box, broadly speaking. So this isn't like a cutback position. It's not near the corner flag. It's not out wide. It's not from what I would call the Kevin De Bruyne position. It's almost in a bit of an in-between position, which surprised me, but clearly that is very useful. That's the best zone to cross from.
Yeah, definitely. It surprised me too, but having kind of thought about it, I think there's probably a few reasons. The first is that area might encapsulate a few different types of crosses you can put in. So you've got from the corner of the box, you can probably put it to the back post, which I think anecdotally is a quite a good chance, because you can get on the blind side of the defender. It's a tough angle to score from, but you know, you've got a pretty good area of the goal to aim for. And then you've probably not got cutbacks, but you've probably just got kind of square balls in the box, which will be categorized as crosses in this instance, and players then have, you know, the centre of the whole goal to aim for. But yeah, that was an interesting one. I perhaps thought that cutbacks might be, you know, maybe a bit further forward in the box, might be a bit better, but it's probably... What we don't think of there is the wastage, the number of crosses which just like get blocked or cleared or go for a corner. And I looked through a lot of De Bruyne's crosses because they confirm that situation, and a lot of them are just defended first time. And it's only really in a situation where City have a real man advantage or that the box is very unorganised when that cross becomes effective for him.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, I'd encourage everyone to go and read the article if this is of interest, because the visualization is probably the best bit of the article rather than the text itself. And the eight different zones they're kind of logical when you think about the separation. I like the fact you had to give them names as well, which is always the slightly tricky bit. I like High and Wide because it reminds me a little bit of a Radiohead song. And it's just, you can, I mean, another thing you did, which maybe it's worth going on to now, is you also looked at the players who cross most frequently from each zone. And that was interesting because you can really start to visualize them. So, for example, I've just referred to one zone as the Kevin De Bruyne position, which I hope is, you know, one that people will mean. Not central, not on the right, not really high up level with the penalty box, but kind of in that in-between midfield position, I thought was really interesting. High outside the penalty area is another one where I wouldn't necessarily have guessed the player. The thing I like about that, the two players who cross from the left and the right from high outside the penalty area are Bertrand and Traore, but not Bertrand Traore, which confused me at first. Any other patterns you found from this? Anything that jumped out on you or surprised you, I guess, is always the interesting category of players in this regard.
Yeah, probably the ones that are kind of high in the corner, high by the corner flag, which is the second most popular zone to cross from, which you can kind of imagine, you know, fullback has overlapping winger, plays to him, ball comes in. It's a really popular zone to cross from, but it was only the sixth best area to cross on when it comes to kind of number of goals scored from there. So that one for me is interesting. You know, teams still will cross a lot from there even when it's a fairly bad strategy, and I do wonder if you kind of have to expand the window a bit more, not just 6 seconds, but does that do something where you then get the second ball on the edge of the area and you can start a move from there, and it's actually a more efficient way of getting that ball into that zone 14 without having the quality to kind of get the ball there in the first place. So that was one that was interesting. The other is the kind of half space channel area, which the kind of players which I identified there just really made sense to me. And you've got De Bruyne from the right hand side clipping in and Robertson from the left. And I think Robertson was really, really effective from that zone, arguably the most effective player from there. So it was just nice to see kind of the zones in your head that you've kind of built up a mental image of match with the data at times, and then others which it really completely doesn't. I think Adama Traore was you just mentioned him about that kind of high outside the penalty area. He makes that across in that situation far more than any other player. I think it was 141 and the next highest was like 90 or something like that, so that very much is his game. It's, you know, run down, get to the byline, chip it back in. So yeah, it was a lot of fun kind of seeing those different zones and who's using them.
Yeah, I like, there's a couple I really like. I mean, high inside the penalty area, you've got, so these are kind of cutback positions, I suppose, broadly speaking. You've got Mane and Bernardo Silva kind of getting in there through, probably, maybe even from through balls in behind to get into those positions or going between defenders. And then you've got high and wide, which is basically near the corner flags, where the two most prolific crossers are Charlie Taylor and Mark Albrighton, who just feel so old school. Yeah. You know, Charlie Taylor's a very, yeah, almost a 1990s fullback, and Albrighton, one of the last wingers around, I suppose, who is predominantly a crosser. And I just imagine him really almost running around the ball to dig out across from near the corner flag. I guess the most interesting player, and this won't come as a surprise, I mean, you mentioned De Bruyne already, he's probably the other contender for this, but Alexander-Arnold. I mean, if we combine the two things we've been talking about, you found that the least profitable place to cross from was deep and by the touchline. So basically traditional fullback positions, I'd say. But Alexander-Arnold, who is the most prolific assister, most regularly crosses from those positions. So my conclusion from that is he is just an insanely good crosser, or is there more nuance to it?
Yeah, it is funny. I mean, 131 crosses from that area, which, like you said, is the most, but he's only got one assist in that time, which is not quite Aubameyang numbers, but, you know, it's up there. And it does make me think that, you know, why is he being asked to do that so much? Because Liverpool have the numbers, they have the understanding internally to work out that is not a, you know, directly creating a lot of chances. So again, is it just because they can pick up second balls and counter press from where the ball ends up after that? But it's the kind of half space area was, again, Robertson's really, really good from the left side. De Bruyne is on the right side, but even Trent himself has four assists and one added assist from 123 crosses in that location. So that was really interesting. But yeah, a lot of this kind of article was a bit with Trent in mind, because it's just such a big part of his game. And I mean, he had the most added assists, which I think it's 7 overall, and those obviously goals are our own goals scored within 6 seconds of putting a cross in. But generally with Trent, there's this whole issue with players such as him, because he will be high up in terms of goals created and you know, assists and things like that, because he just crosses the ball so much. So he's got 0.18 total assists per 90, which is top of all players in that time. But if you look at the numbers per 100 crosses, so for every 100 crosses, how many assists would you expect from these guys, or how many do they get per their numbers? Leroy Sané was by far and away the most kind of successful crosser, the most threatening. Then Marcus Rashford, then Kevin De Bruyne. So there's a trade-off here, because Sané doesn't cross a lot. He only gets in those situations an infrequent number of times, but they're obviously very, very high value and threatening areas. Whereas Trent is putting the ball in a lot because he does have quality, and probably because he can create more than the average player would from the positions he gets into. So yeah, it's an interesting dynamic of like volume and efficiency, and Trent I think is definitely a mix of the both. But then you've got, you know, Sané, Rashford and De Bruyne, who are all very good technical players, don't cross a ton, but are also very good at picking up assists as well on a kind of efficiency basis.
And in terms of the efficiency and the effectiveness of the crosses, I mean, Alexander-Arnold's very good, De Bruyne's very good, that one comes as a surprise. Is there anyone else who kind of stands out in that respect, who looks good from this, you know, relatively unique approach to analysing crossing?
Yeah, Matt Ritchie was one who, again, maybe if you, from being honest, probably thought of him as a decent crosser, but he's one who, if you looked at kind of the number of assists you'd expect him to get from his crosses, number he actually gets, and I kind of use that differential as a measure of, I guess, quality of crossing or you know, crossing ability. He was fourth on the list, I think, behind you know, Trent, De Bruyne, Robertson, and then himself. And it's quite poetic watching the Newcastle game at the weekend, and he pops up with a cross for Joe Willock to kind of bash in at the end to win the game against West Ham. So that was a really nice timing. So yeah, Ritchie was one of them for sure. I'm trying to think of others. There was maybe, I think, Callum Hudson-Odoi is someone who comes up really, really high in terms of just like crossing assists and added assists from wide positions. And we've seen Tuchel try and use him a lot more. I mean, we've seen him at wing-back recently, which was a bit of a surprise early in the season. But you then see in the numbers kind of the threat that he adds from these wide positions, and it starts to make a lot more sense to use him there. So he's one that I would be kind of watching going forwards when he's in these wide positions. Like, what locations is he crossing from? It probably helps with a guy like Giroud in the box at times. I mean, Ben Chilwell is someone who, when you look to the difference between his expected assists from crosses and actual assists, was a lot higher. And I mentioned that to a couple of friends who work at clubs, and like, you know, what's the reason for that? And they were like, well, helps having Giroud up front, it helps having Vardy to maybe crash in second balls. So there's a lot of, you know, I wrote in the piece kind of, it takes two to tango from crosses. You need a good receiver the same way you need a good crosser. So yeah, there's some players here who look really good, but I think it's because the receivers they're going to, or the guys they're crossing towards, are just incredible in the air, and they can make a bad cross look like a good one.
Yeah, there's a few interesting players. I mean, I found Ward-Prowse quite interesting. He's kind of at the lower end of the scale in terms of the effectiveness of his crossing, which is interesting because a lot of people would consider him the best corner taker in the league. But it's a different skill, isn't it? It's a more open skill. You do need, I think, a little bit more imagination, a little bit of maybe more creative ability in you. I think actually of slightly different note, but I think of Oxlade-Chamberlain as a player who's very good at delivering set pieces, but not necessarily good delivering passes in open play. So maybe he's along the same lines.
Yeah, I'm the same with Ward-Prowse. I kind of think that in open play, the players he's crossing to, in terms of, you know, Ings and Adams and Bertrand, and the kind of more smaller wingers are different to the guys he's probably aiming for at set pieces. You know, Bednarek's a giant, Vestergaard's a giant, and again, it's this whole like the receiver has a big part to play in making the cross a good cross. I mean, without them, it's nothing will happen. Which, yeah, again, and then it's interesting, kind of like how do you measure like, you know, technique and we talk a lot about technical players, but someone like Ward-Prowse, if you just looked at open play and you just looked at these numbers, you wouldn't really think he's that good. But there's probably a lot more from actually watching it, where you can see the quality of the delivery is good, even if the guy at the end of it isn't great. So yeah, I think that's a very difficult thing to measure, and that's probably why, you know, we still have people watching video. You know, data can't answer everything, and this is one of the kind of blind spots we have at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. My last question on this is, to what extent does variety make a difference to the effectiveness of crossing? Because I remember being at an OptiPro forum a long time ago, probably 5 or 6 years ago. It was really interesting, it suggested that different types of attack made a difference, or they're more effective when it was a bit of a surprise. So, for example, if you'd attempted a few attacking moves with long balls or through balls, then a cross was more likely to be successful than if it was your 10th cross in a row. I guess my question is, a Liverpool's cross is good in part because they have threats from elsewhere and they're not just a Burnley, they're not just a crossing team.
Yeah, I think that work was done by Sam Gregory, who's now works for Inter Miami as their director of analytics. So somewhat, again, nice of this podcast that we've got someone working for Beckham's club, all-time great crosser of the ball, doing research that we talk about here. But yeah, I've not looked into this in any real detail, but I think it's a really good question. And from, you know, think about it, if you put yourself in the shoes of a defender, it's probably, if you're facing the same thing over and over again, it probably becomes more repetitive, almost like in training, and you kind of get conditioned to how to deal with that situation, where if you've got kind of, you know, they're countering you one second from the left and the other from the right a different time, there's a lot more kind of chaos, there's a lot of things to, I guess, in your mind deal with, let alone deal with the ball. So I think coming back to that original example with kind of Arteta and pure maths, like maybe if Arsenal varied their approach a bit more, they'd actually have more luck delivering balls into the box that wouldn't just be kind of, you know, unthreatening, for lack of a better word. So yeah, I think that's definitely an interesting one.
Yeah, well, once again, I'd encourage everyone to have a look at the article on the site, because like I said, it's the visualisations that are really interesting. And it's, I guess, a modern approach to it, an age-old question. I remember doing research on Blackburn Rovers when they won the title in 1995, and there was a big debate on the training ground between Ray Harford, who was the assistant manager but for all intents and purposes was almost led the side in every training session, and he always said that you should cross the ball from what he called the magic box, which was basically the sides of the pitch, kind of as if the penalty box continued across the width of the pitch. So he didn't want his players ever to cross from there. He wanted Ripley and Wilcox and Graham Lassow to get in those positions. And Alan Shearer was very insistent that he didn't mind crosses from deeper positions, from those kind of Beckham positions. And I actually asked Shearer about this when I was doing an article with him early in the season. Of course, he is one of our columnists for The Athletic. So next time, if I'm ever on Shearer duty, I might well send this article his way or send him some of the visualizations, because I think to a certain extent, some of it supports his view in terms of the best crossing positions. That's all we've got for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks very much to Tom for joining me discussing this. There is, as always, lots of other stuff on the site at the moment. I think I'm right in saying it's been our busiest few days, or one of our busiest periods, at least since we launched coming up to 2 years ago, because of course of the chat about the Super League. But there's so much else on the site. There's still the usual Premier League coverage. Massive week in the WSL. Huge game this week between Manchester City and Chelsea. I'll be covering that. Tom, anything you are focusing on in the coming days?
Getting wrapped up really for the Manchester City's title parade. So what's the kind of the data and the stories and the data behind their season this season, because the stories of their title win this season, it's probably unlikely that Manchester United catch them. Yeah, a lot to look forward to there. Going to be working with Sam Lee on a couple of big reads, so excited for that.
Yeah, nice one. I think I'm doing a similar article on all the different formations Guardiola has used this season, which is a never-ending task. Might need some of your cluster analysis for that one. But that's it. Thank you very much for joining us. I think Ali will be back with us next week, so hopefully see you then.
The Athletic.